Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Thanks for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Dave, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's actually a warm day here. It's around 65. We had some really cold days, but it's nice now. How are you doing up over there?
We're doing all right. You know, sunny and 65 or 70 for the foreseeable future. I looked at our long-range forecast, and I don't think we had above a 4% chance of rain for like the next 2 weeks. Oh, so. Man.
Nice.
Yeah, that California winter.
Yeah.
You know, we had some traffic this week. We posted an article that was in missionlocal.org, and the title of the article was VCA to Sell Mission District Veterinary Hospital and Says Workers Will Be Laid Off, Unionization Efforts Appear to Be Quashed. And we reposted this to our page.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? We got a lot of traffic both in the comments section on our post, and there was a few comments, too, on the original article.
Yeah, the comments in the original article kind of go along with how comments on public articles usually go, where it's just a lot of terrible things to say. But on ours, you know, we had Liz that chimed in a lot because, you know, this is something near and dear to her heart.
Yep.
About how just terrible this is that, you know, you look at this, and when you first sent me the article, my response to you was, so essentially they sold the practice and shut it down just to stop a union effort, which is just terrible. Like, that's their solution to how we're going to deal with a union effort, is to just, you know what, we're just going to shut down and be done with all the profits that we could possibly make. You know, they could have done something really great here, and instead they went in the other direction, which is just terrible.
Right. And, you know, one of the comments in our post on that, in the post that we made on that was from Valerie Hayden, and she had posted and she had linked in an article that a couple of years ago the FTC made VCA shed, or Mars, I guess, really.
Yeah, Mars.
Shed like 10, 12 clinics or something because they were kind of violating antitrust laws in that particular area. And there's really hard data out there about how many practices VCA are buying up. And I think that kind of goes to, you know, when I think back on my time at Tufts, and I used to talk to all the fourth year students about kind of what their career path was going to be, how they saw it then.
Yeah.
Nobody, I mean, maybe one or two people ever mentioned practice ownership.
Right.
And
right.
And if younger veterinarians don't really have that as a career goal, then the corporate is going to be the one that's going to be buying all these clinics. And
yeah,
it's just, you know, I really am both curious and a little bit fearful of what the landscape is going to be in terms of practice ownership in 15, 20 years.
Because, yeah, right.
You know, as some of the veterinarians that are owners right now retire, you know, if there's nobody behind them that wants to buy them, you know, that's a private practitioner, you know, this is only going to continue to steamroll in one direction.
Well, and also if you think about it, you know, I'm kind of thinking back to, you know, 20, 30 years ago when we first started, the people that owned practices were people that graduated in, you know, like the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that had the money to buy those practices, because vet school did not cost quite as much as it does now. So now, and you know this with Molly, that getting out of vet school, you get out of vet school with $250,000 in debt sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
how are you going to even pay that off and then think about buying a practice?
Right.
It's just not feasible to actually do that.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, again, it's one of those, you know, on the surface, this seems like a one problem or, you know, one problem, one solution. But when you really start to dig deep, it's just another multifactorial problem with so many different layers. And it's a shame on so many levels. And you kind of talk about, you know, going back 15, 20 years. I mean, I can think of my time in that career. There was, while this was a heavily populated area and there was veterinary clinics on seemingly every street corner. I only remember one VCA.
Yeah.
And then I remember when another veterinarian who was a longtime practitioner in the community sold to VCA because he ultimately wanted to retire.
Right.
You know, that was a big thing in the community, in the veterinary community, in terms of like, oh no, here comes corporate. You know, it was kind of like, shh, you know, kind of taboo. And now they're everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, I want to thank all of the people that commented on our post and Liz for putting in so much insight. And as you said, this is, you know, something that she worked so hard to, you know, to fight against and bring attention to. And this is nothing else. It's a really good learning opportunity that this is actually occurring. This actually is going on, that, you know, that a company like this, whether, you know, obviously they'll never admit to it, but they are actively trying to, you know, prevent unionization in their facilities. You know, none of these employees were retained. They were all laid off.
Slash fired.
Right. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens with other clinics in that area. You know, if anybody else tries to, you know, start unionization in their individual clinics under the MARS umbrella, and where that goes. But it's really, really unfortunate.
Yeah, and the union effort, I think is, you know, I think when we talked to Liz, we realized this is an uphill battle, but
I think
this is just kind of highlighting how uphill it is. There's a lot of work to do to get where we need to be.
Right, and potentially also highlights the importance of it. I mean, you know, it's obvious that employer doesn't want to give things to veterinary technicians that we should be having based on our level of skill and knowledge, and, you know, as a field, basically, we don't get. So,
And then just also think about, I don't remember everything that was put into some of these unionization contracts, but that's got to be something that needs to be added in if it's not already. What happens to us when you sell?
Right.
Do we fall the way that this clinic went and everyone gets fired because of it? Or, you know, that's obviously the big risk of unionization is your employer going to just flat out fire you for it?
Right. Yeah. It's a really, really sad state of affairs for those for those people that were affected by that closure. And if you were affected by that, and, you know, if you were employed there and you hear this, reach out and send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to help tell your story. You know, we're not looking for inside information or anything, but just we'd love to talk about it and talk about your experience with it and
keep the conversation going.
Keep the conversation going and keep bringing awareness to it. So if you guys hear this and you were working at that hospital, please, you know, and you're interested, please reach out and shoot us a message. We'd love to talk about it.
Yeah. So I'm sure Liz knows somebody that worked there and is going to put us in contact with them probably by tomorrow.
I wouldn't doubt it. And I would very much be open to that. So
me too.
Well, what do you think? Should we go ahead and get on with this episode?
This episode, I really like this one. This is really insightful.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, I think this guest in particular is super awesome. It's a really, really cool topic. We're going to be talking about rehab stuff. So, caffeinators, I really hope you guys enjoy this episode, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Hello, caffeinators. Thanks for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe for another episode. Dave, how's it going down there?
It's going good. We're getting down into the really cold weather where, you know, I wake up in the
North
morning. That North Carolina cold where I wake up and it's like 35, but then it doesn't really get much above 50, and that's not what I've become accustomed to down here. Up north, I think about the cold that they're dealing with up there. This morning I was actually driving into a job and thinking that it was 32 and my gas was low, and thinking that, if it gets really cold and my gas is really low, the car might not start. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm in North Carolina, not New Hampshire.
Yeah. Not really a concern.
No, not a concern at all.
I was doing one of my training sessions today with poison control, and there's like 7 or 8 of us that were all hired at the same time. So we're all on the same Zoom chat, kind of learning a lot of the functions of the program. And so, you know, we're watching the trainer, but we can see all of each other. And there's one gal who's a technician, and she's in Colorado somewhere, and she's at her computer and she's literally draped in a sleeping bag. and finally the trainer was like, are you cold over there? And she's like, well, it's snowing today and I was cold, so I'm just like wrapped in a sleeping bag. And I was like, well, it's 75 and sunny here in Southern California. So,
of course it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we've got another, awesome guest today.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of have started working our way through a lot of the VTS academies. That was definitely something we wanted to do. The last one we talked with was equine.
Yep.
And, we have another one today that I know you and I probably many times throughout our career have had a lot of people that are interested in this particular specialty. So I'm super excited to talk about it. We have Kristen Hagler coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. She's been a RVT in California since 2002. Lots of credentials that relate to animal rehab.
There's a lot of letters there.
Yeah, there's a lot of letters here. I'm going to explain all these, but I'll give you the abbreviations first. There's CCRP, which is Certification for Canine Physical Rehabilitation. CVPP, which is Certified Veterinary Pain Practitioner. Easy for me to say. CBW, which is Canine Body Work. OACM, which is Osteoarthritis Case Management, and then VCC, the Veterinary Cannabis Counseling, which is also super cool and fear-free certified as well. In 2012, she helped form the organizing committee of the Academy of Physical Rehab Veterinary Technicians, APRVT, and then kind of through work with a lot of colleagues around the country, was able to get the VTS in physical rehab kind of accredited in 2006,
that's awesome.
2017 by NAFTA. Yeah, super cool. Familiar to me, in 2018, she was the CARVTA California RVT Association Veterinary yeah. Technician of the Year, which was super cool. She lectures on all kinds of topics at all kinds of conferences, published everywhere. Super, super cool. And again, just so knowledgeable on all of these things. So I'm really excited to talk to her today. So Kristen, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. What can we get you for a cup of coffee?
Oh, I'm trying to decide right now between having a glass of wine or just continuing on with the caffeine today. So.
I'll be honest. I have a beer and a cup of coffee going. So,
yeah,
so
double fist.
Yeah, this isn't on Zoom, so it's fair game.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me this evening. You know, I'm super excited to talk with you guys.
Of course.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
Yes, absolutely. So we kind of always start out with having technicians take us through their career paths, because so many people have done so many cool things that we don't ordinarily think about. But it's often a kind of a long and winding road to get to where they are. So if you don't mind, take a few minutes and take us through your path, where you started, things along the way, and where you are now.
Absolutely. Gosh, I could even say this career path is a good way of putting it. Probably started when I was in the kindergarten, and we just had to I just remember describing myself as with one word, and it was persistent. So we'll kind of go back to that, which okay. You could probably imagine with all of those letters
yeah.
after the end of my name. So my persistence, I would say, you know, looking back and reflecting my career pathway, I thought I always wanted to be a veterinarian. And so I went to a university and I got my bachelor's degree in animal physiology. And of course, what do? When you're an undergrad, you volunteer your entire time away. And so I just remember my mom saying, and bless her, that, oh, you have to volunteer everywhere. And I just remember rolling my eyes going, oh my gosh, this is just ridiculous. I want to like work. But anyways, I found myself in a volunteer position at Guide Dogs for the Blind in Northern California. And at that time, I was in the veterinary department and I was able to be a vet assistant. And they gave me all these tasks to do. And they had a whole bunch of orthopedic patients there, which was really, really fun. And that's kind of where I had my career pathway kind of go off to the side. And I realized, you know what? I really like this hands-on stuff and really being involved with the patients. And so I decided to pursue what would it take to be a registered veterinary technician. And so while everybody was really disappointed, I was really excited about my new possible career pathway. And I myself, I'm an athlete too. So the orthopedic stuff and just recovering from knee injuries, I haven't thankfully had a knee injury myself, but
knock on wood or something right now.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, let me just say a lot of jumping, playing around with the volleyball, that's got a lot of arthritis gone, but that's okay. What that really did, it just really helped solidify my passion, and that I really like the sports medicine kind of application blend to the dogs. And so at that time, there was a pathway to become credentialed, you know, in California through an alternate route using my bachelor's degree, which was great. So I went that pathway and I really haven't looked back since. At that time, when I got my RVT license in 2002, I stumbled across the program at the University of Tennessee where I got my CCRP at. And I completed that in 2005. And literally, it was just an internet search. Like, nobody was doing canine rehab in the area. It was very new. And I just kept digging. And then the more I kept digging and the more I kept finding things, you know, on the internet, the more and more I just became like, I got to do this. This is so cool. I remember doing my externship at UC Davis with a registered veterinary technician and a physical therapist. And I remember us all sitting in the cafeteria, kind of brainstorming, going, this stuff is so cool. Wouldn't it be great if we could all work together, you know, just treating patients together, you know, have the veterinarians there and everything, and kind of planning. But we didn't really know what we were planning at the time. which is kind of interesting, you know, when you look back at your career and everything. And then fast forward several years later, you know, I stayed at that facility at Guide Dogs for the Blind, and then sort of new opportunities just started kind of coming out of the woodwork. And I started splitting my time going into private practices and specialty practices, working with, I call it the real world patients. Guide Dogs for the Blind is like Disneyland. Those dogs are so amazing to work with. But, you know, I started working more with client owned pets and stuff, which really helped give me a good balance of, you know, an overview for being a specialist in physical rehabilitation. And then, you know, just getting involved with all the different organizations as well helped to connect me to all these different people around the country that eventually formed the charter members for the Academy, which is a tongue twister. I can just say every time I get up and lecture and just have to say, I am the president of the Academy of Physical Rehabilitation Veterinary Technicians. I mean, it's hilarious. So, you know, the journey has been really, really cool. Just learning through all the applications with like pain management, behavior, physiology, orthopedics, and surgery, nutrition. I mean, all of those things just kind of have evolved into kind of where we're at today with the VTS Academy.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. You know, one question I have in there, you said you were an alternate route student in California, as am I. And we've talked on a few different episodes about this kind of along the way. And has that ever been a hindrance for you? Have there ever been any closed doors for you professionally? It doesn't sound like it, but as a result of you being an alternate route student, not an AVMA accredited school grad?
It has not.
Okay.
But if I wanted to move out of the state,
yes,
it would.
Yes.
So yes. I did make a very conscious decision at that time that I was going to not take the national exam. I knew that I was on that bubble window of, I need to take that national exam if there's any possibility of moving to another state. Mm. So I just kind of knew, like, I like California. I like where I'm at. I'm going to stay. I mean, I've got kind of everything within 45 minutes, so, right, that I'd like to do. But yeah, so if I did move out of state, then, you know, I'd have to obviously go take the national exam. But otherwise, no, it really hasn't.
Okay.
Yeah, I think actually having the bachelor's degree has given me a lot of other opportunities,
right,
because I was able to lecture for a school for students undergoing their master's on orthopedics and geriatrics. It was an assistance dog school that I was able to do that. And if I didn't have my bachelor's, then
they couldn't
have been ineligible.
So, cool.
Yeah, it's a yes and no question.
Okay, all right.
And just thinking about, you know, this is something that we're starting to ask all our guests now that we're in November of 2020, that wonderful year 2020. it's going to be an insult years to come to say something was just like 2020. Just thinking about COVID and the restrictions that we're having, has that impacted you a lot in what you do as a rehabilitator, or has it kind of not really impacted you all that much? Like, what has 2020 done for you right now?
Well, 2020, when it started, when we started, we had a good start, you know, up until January, because I was in Japan lecturing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got back literally when everything started shutting down. So it started out good and then it tanked.
Yeah.
but really, it's impacted things quite a bit. In rehab, we have such a great client, patient, practitioner bond that, you know, they're with us. We spend so much time with these clients, probably more so than in any other specialty. Probably, you know, behavior might be one that they spend a lot of time with the pet parents, and maybe oncology. But I'm often seeing these patients and their pet parents weekly to twice weekly for years. And then all of a sudden we had to say, sorry, you can't come in.
Yeah.
So that was a really traumatic thing, I think, for everyone. And also, we had to actually stop services for a while. In the beginning, you know, when everything was trying to be teased out of what's essential, what's not essential. And unfortunately, we had to stop services for several weeks because it was not emergency stuff. A lot of the rehab, you know, only for very painful patients where it's, you know, life or death. We don't see those in the general practice that I'm at, you know, in the certain emergency hospitals and specialty hospitals. I know people were able to stay open for just very select patients, but it really did impact things quite a bit.
We're probably going to get into, you know, what you do as a physical therapy technician, but what kind of adjustments did you have to make with that, the care of those patients? Was it all just did you do virtual meetings, did you do like phone calls, or how did you kind of keep up with their care while also backing off of the contact that you have with them?
Yep, all of it. So all of it. Okay. We had to change and pretty much everything and get really creative. You know, we probably, I'd say, put heavier emphasis on the home care programs for the pet parents. Because, I mean, everybody likes services and service-based things and bringing their pets somewhere for something to be done to them. But they didn't have that option anymore. So, yeah, we were using telemedicine quite a bit. Phone calls, videos, pictures, a lot of media evaluations and everything. So we can really help the pet parents through different things and help them continue their care. I had a lot of clients that were interested in renting therapeutic lasers. That there's a lot of companies out there that are able to do that, and they provide continuing education for the pet parents so it's safe and we can help them through the process. There's a lot of other pain devices that can be prescribed for the pet at home. So we could keep up on that pain management aspect and keep the pets going until we could slowly and gradually bring the pet back, at least, so they could get their therapies done. So it's definitely very creative.
Yeah. And just thinking, you know, Jeff and I have said this a lot, hopefully something good comes out of this entire situation, this whole curbside, the separation, the not seeing patients. Do you think that is something that's going to continue on, like the virtual visits? Is telemedicine something that you're going to be doing more of now that, you know, once we do actually get out of COVID restrictions, if that ever happens? Is that something that you're going to continue on with, or do you think that's going to go away?
I don't think it'll go away. Yeah. I think it's a very useful tool. And I've actually kind of found that it helps me because I'm getting videos of the pets in their environment.
Oh,
whereas,
yeah.
You know, the pet parents, usually they didn't, like, oh, that takes too much time, I'm not going to do that. Now they don't have any other choice. So you get videos of them and where they're not stressed out. You can actually see what, you know, the different corners and turns and all the different things in the house. So you can really help customize what your recommendations are going to be. So it's actually, I think, a good thing. I mean, I always try and find silver lining, like, sure. Yeah, this is lame, but... So, and the you know, they seem to actually really enjoy it too. I think there's like a little bit more of a deeper connection as well.
That's great.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I know when we talked to Tabitha Cusera about behavior several months ago, she kind of said the same thing, that while a lot of things had gone virtually, now she could see patients in their home environment, and which she kind of already did to some degree prior, but more so she was getting to see what their kind of normal day-to-day look like. And that's super fascinating that might be something that useful that you could carry over. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, you've been doing this, sounds like, a long time, like Dave and I have. From where kind of you sit in this profession, where do you see the veterinary tech profession right now? And or what do you see as like our biggest obstacle? Like some of those kind of tough questions, where do you see us being? And if you had ultimate authority for a day over the profession, what would you do to fix one big problem?
Oh gosh, the biggest problem. I mean, I'm going to have to say the underutilization, that one is a big, big thing. And that, you know, the veterinary technicians, there's so many of us that are so educated. We have so much excitement and passion for all the stuff that's in our head. And, you know, we just want to get it out and to share. And sometimes that excitement, for whatever reason, just gets lost in translation or is not accepted well. People are too busy. And unless you have that persistence, like I do, which so I'm sure is very annoying for some people, but I always joke with them and say, hey, if it's too much, just got to say something. That, you know, that excitement can just get tampered down. And so, you know, that's where people start to like, oh, I'm not good at my job, or you have that imposter syndrome, that kind of stuff. That if I had, you know, the magic wand to make everything better, that, you know, that we would be utilized to our fullest capacity. And in what you're really interested in, what you're good at, you know, to really be good at a bunch of different things is not that great sometimes. Like, that's why I feel like specializing, it really helps you kind of focus on something if you're that type of person, so you can be that expert in that field. I mean, of course, I think the hardest thing is to learn to say, I don't know something, but I always tell people, especially the newer technicians, that's okay to say. It's okay to say, I don't know, but I can get you the answer.
Right.
You know, that's really important. So, you know, everything, I would just love to have everybody work together. Yeah. Instead of having the egos. You know, it's like we're all there for the same reason. We want to help the pet parent. We want to help the pets. And we want to be good at our jobs.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. It's impossible to know everything. So yeah. Take your niche and partner with somebody else who has a completely different niche and pool your heads together. You can be unstoppable.
Yes, I totally agree. I wish I had more room in my brain, but I don't. I keep carving out different spots and it doesn't work.
Well, and just thinking about utilization, my one question would be, how many of you are there? And when I say you, I mean, how many VTSs in your niche of the world are there right now?
Yes. So the VTSs, there's 18 of us, which right. I'm pretty proud of in the short amount awesome. Of time that, yeah. you know, we've had the academy going. But the amount of veterinary technicians and assistants, too, that have credentials and have gone to that extra level and have that extra training, there's a lot of us. I mean, it's definitely way over 100. You know, I don't have those numbers in sure, front of sure, me, but sure. every state's got some sort of trained professional, you know, veterinarians, physical therapists, the veterinary technicians and veterinary assistants that have that extra layer of knowledge in the specialty field. So it's really, really a cool thing that there's obviously a lot of need for it, that people are seeking out the different training programs.
And do you think that there's, I guess in the last couple of hospitals that I've worked in, most recent one had a physical therapy, I don't want to say department. It was basically one of the surgeons and one of the technicians were really into that and they did that. But for the most part, I don't think most of the other hospitals that I've worked at really have that going for them. Do you think that's partly because there's not a doctor that's willing to do all that? Or is it that we as technicians can take charge of and kind of lead that path?
That's a very good question. And it's very multifactorial.
Yeah.
So in a crystal ball world, and I honestly think like the best way, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. So I've had a lot of different models to kind of look through and what works and what doesn't work. Having a veterinarian that's certified in rehabilitation, you know, a board certified diplomat would be amazing. But to have that veterinarian who really actually understands what you're doing helps so much. Sure. Maybe that person doesn't necessarily do all the hydrotherapy or do the laser therapy, but they understand why that pet needs to keep coming weekly. They help to prescribe, because in most states, these things are prescriptions. They're prescribing the therapies. So in a practice that doesn't have a specifically trained veterinarian in the rehabilitation field as a technician, I can tell you, you got a lot of work to cut out for you. It's very, very hard. And it's something that takes a very special person to keep the department going. It's possible, but you have to have a very special relationship with your veterinarian. And usually those veterinarians that want to have that department and to make it successful, they're also incorporating the whole team. Because what can happen is you have a little rehab department and it's almost like it's on an island or a peninsula and you've got all the normal, you know, stuff going on in the veterinary hospital, but you never see the rehab department, you know? So they really try and make it a cohesive thing where everybody understands the value of it. Hmm. You know, especially hospitals. I mean, this is like a global thing as well. Especially hospitals, you might have a rehab department, and you wonder, hey, how come that surgeon's not referring that, you know, TPLO over to rehab? Like, they should be coming for rehab. And it's always that big crystal ball question of, why is this not happening? How come there's not this natural progression? And I don't think anybody really has the answer yet, other than we're all just too dang busy.
So
it's possible, you know, to have technicians run the rehab departments. I mean, I've done it in all the different hospitals that I've been at and been very successful, but it's a lot of work. And I do have to say, in my lectures for techs and everything, I would say, if you're going to do that, you really have to define your role so you don't put yourself in a silo. Because you don't want other people, I mean, jealousy is big. You don't want that to happen. You want it to be a team effort and have ownership for all of that kind of stuff for everybody.
For sure. So if you don't mind, we kind of said at the outset when I was reading your bio, all of the certifications and stuff that you have. So if we can take a minute and just kind of break some of these down. So CCRP, if I'm not mistaken, that's what you did through University of Tennessee, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Yep. And what is that? What does that look like? And I guess really for technicians, I hate to phrase it this way, but what does that do for you?
What does that allow you to do? What it allows you to do is going to vary by state and local laws and stuff like that. But what it gives you is this amazing level of knowledge. You know, you go to technician school and you learn the basics of anatomy, physiology. You know, yeah, there's all these muscles, there's always all these bones and stuff like that. But when you go to a program like this, where you're focusing on just the anatomy and physiology of the nervous system and the musculoskeletal system, it's this whole other layer. You're learning all the different bony prominences and why they're there, all the different muscles and stuff. So for me, it really helped solidify the movement, like why animals move the way they do because of their structure and their function. You're learning all about all the different modalities available as well. I mean, how many people have a laser in their general practice?
Right.
They're everywhere. But what we found, you know, we're doing lectures and stuff, myself and my colleagues, is that a lot of technicians don't understand what they're actually doing with laser therapy. So you're learning what that means and what all giving a certain dose means and why and the side effects and where and all of that stuff. You know, so much more of that superficial layer that the companies give you when you purchase the lasers, because there's so much more to it. Learning how with the treatment programs and stuff, you know, like I've mentioned earlier, I have pets that come weekly for years. You know, you don't learn that how to, you know, look for if the pet's doing well with the modality or not from a short training program. You learn that kind of stuff at the rehabilitation programs. And you get to meet other professionals too, which is probably one of the bigger things. You've got veterinarians, physical therapists, physical therapy assistants, and veterinary technicians and nurses. If people come from other countries, you're all in the same room. You're all learning the same stuff, and you're really sharing so much information, which is really, really kind of cool. I mean, it's like a big nerd fest. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's CCRP. What CVPP? I know we had Tasha McNerney on, Dave, who was also a CVPP. Yeah. So we kind of talked about that a little bit. But for you, how does that apply to the animal rehab side of things?
For me, gosh, I would say that this has opened up my mind to so many new things. The CVPP has been such a great asset for the multifactorial parts of pain and pain assessment, evaluation, and awareness, and also the education to my colleagues and to pet parents. And it added this massive layer to things. You know, I've had people ask, you know, which ones of these credentials would you value the most? And I'd absolutely say the CVPP, that it's a very challenging process. And I really think that what it did for me in my career was the case reports. Those are hard case reports to write. hard. But what it did, though, is it really helped prepare me for all the literature things that I've written, you know, because they really emphasize that it has to be the quality for publication in a peer-reviewed article or a publication. So that requires you to have all those checkpoints. And so if people are kind of hemming and hawing of, oh, I'm not sure if I'm ready to do my VTS or not, I say, hey, get your CVPP if you can, because it will only help you further down the road. I mean, the exam itself was incredibly hard. I know several very well-known veterinary mm-hmm. technicians that are brilliant, and they all say, this exam is hard because what you're doing, you're taking this exam, and so are veterinarians. It's the same. It's yeah. the same exam for everyone. So it's a really, really great accomplishment, as well as just adding to that extra layer for my patients when we're working with them.
Gotcha. And how about CBW, canine body work?
Yeah. So that one, oh, I had to do that one. Full disclosure, I mean, they were giving the course in my hometown, so it was kind of convenient. So I've been looking for something a little bit more, because, you know, I'm always looking for more, and I just wanted more information on muscles. And so that one just helped me gain a better understanding of muscles and the myofascial system and everything. It was really kind of cool because we had to do case reports for those as well. We had to get some patients and take pictures of them, draw their muscles on all these different layers and everything. And develop assessment programs for them, you know, for massage, and help with the owners for stretching and everything. So it was a really cool thing to do, to add to the background of knowledge that I already had. So that was me wanting to, I just wanted to know more.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's one I hadn't heard of that. That was like all the other ones I've, you know, I know about, but I'd never heard of the canine bodywork one.
Yeah. They're, the program definitely has, it's more, I mean, they had the canine one obviously that I did, but they're very big on the equine. There's a lot of equine body workers. I mean, they have all these different master level programs, and they teach internationally and stuff.
So. Yeah. I was going to ask, you said that was in your hometown, but where else is that offered? Is it offered like
everywhere? It's international, which is really cool, but it's hard to get the instructors, obviously.
Yeah.
I bet. And then the last one I'll ask about, which I can see is just based on the title alone, is probably a huge portion of what you do, the osteoarthritis case management, the OACM. I'll leave the veterinary cannabis counseling certification for another discussion, because I think we're going to talk to somebody about that specifically down the road. But the OACM, what does that look like?
So that's another great layer to add to the rehab stuff.
Okay.
And, you know, and I did all of these after, you know, the CCRPs. And that was just me finding, wow, there's so many dogs and cats that have osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. Learning more of a specific thing, the specific, you know, things that happen in the joints, the synovial fluid, all of the cartilage changes and stuff like that, like what actually is happening, and the pain aspect of it as well. So that's what's really cool with all these different certifications, that you can really focus on one thing to help broaden the scope of your base knowledge. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I keep taking all of these things, is because, you know, you reach a point, go, I know there's more that I need to help with these pet parents. I've got a couple things, you know, down the road that I'll end up probably doing, but the osteoarthritis one just helped kind of solidify everything just a little bit more. I mean, to keep me on top of, you know, the new things that have come out as well, because research is always changing, you know, from 10 years ago. I mean, we didn't have things like Galliprant. People are using medications off-label as well now. So, you know, just being able to connect with all the colleagues around the country and seeing what's, you know, working clinically for the patients is kind of cool.
For sure. You just mentioned in there that you have your eye on a couple other things for down the road. not for you to, you know, spill the beans on what you might have in the works, but what other kind of things are there out there that you haven't yet accomplished?
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, there's acupressure courses.
Ooh.
That would be really interesting, you know, because in California, acupuncture is limited to veterinarians, but acupressure is something that veterinary technicians are able to do. There's, I don't know if you've ever seen at the Olympics, all the athletes having that tape, the special tape on their body.
Tape?
Kinesiotaping. Yeah. There's a kinesiotaping certification course. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of it just because I use it myself. Like, this stuff works.
Wow.
It's amazing. But we can apply it to animals as well. There's a joint mobilization, joint manipulation courses, not chiropractic. It's a layer under that, but just really fine tuning stuff, myofascial things. So yeah, there's a couple that I've got my idea on. And even looking at research too, there's a couple of research courses that are specific to rehab that I'm looking at as well.
Super cool.
Yeah. Wow. So there's still tons of possibilities, but again, I have to decide because I only do one at a time.
Got to pick your poison.
I do.
I'm already just trying to imagine how many letters do you have on your scrubs right now? does it go down your arm?
It could. No, when I go to the conference, you get all those little badges. You're like,
Oh, yeah.
How long can your lanyard go?
Yeah. The flag contest.
I stick to the RVT and the VTS.
So you're a charter member of the APRVT, yes. And you said it was a mouthful, so I'm going to let you say it again. and you're currently the president, and this started in 2017, so
yes,
a relatively new specialty. And you said you've got about 18 members, you said,
yes.
Right now?
Yep.
Just thinking about, Jeff and I have gone through the process, and we've been on committees that deal with the credentials. What exactly is on your requirements? Obviously, there's going to be case logs and case reports, but what specific skills do you have? And is there anything different that we see on your application than we would on other specialty certifications?
Yeah, so probably the things that are different compared to other specialty certifications are going to be limited to like the modalities and the therapeutic exercises, things specific to the academy. I mean, there different practices have things like shockwave therapy, but for the APRVT, the technician needs to understand the how, the why, the what not to do. I mean, all of those different pieces of it. And with the laser therapy, you can't just say laser therapy helps heal tissue. That's nice.
Yeah.
hint, any future applicants listening. Don't say that. But you have to tell us really in detail why that it helps with the tissues and the modulation of the cells and stuff like that. So a lot of cellular biology is involved in it. There's case reports. There's 5 case reports, just like most academies have. Mm-hmm. The case logs, the case logs, they're all derived from the exam domains and everything from that as well. Continuing education requirements, online and in person. Just like everybody trying to figure out how to do CE and COVID, right?
Yeah.
That's the other change.
Right.
But you're finding some good things with it, which is good, I suppose. And working with, a mentor. A veterinarian mentor that's certified in rehabilitation or a diplomat is such a big piece, because the whole point of, the academy and everything is to help promote the profession and going forward, right. And the education and everything. So that's where we go back to working in general practice. While it's doable for a technician in general practice to do, but it's going to be much harder to do. Because, general practitioner is not going to necessarily be involved in research and doing, speaking and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, the work experience as well. I feel like we as a organizing committee really had the emphasis that it was important to us for veterinary technicians to have 2 years of general practice medicine under their belt before they can start counting their rehab hours. Because it's a total of 5 years, because there's so many of those little nuances that, dogs and cats have bandages, for example. If you don't ever learn bandaging techniques when you're first starting out, and you just jump straight into rehab, you're going to be at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to learn possibly, this is one of my favorites, the bracing and prosthetics and stuff. If I didn't have the foundation of bandaging techniques as just a technician, I wouldn't be able to jump into bracing and prosthetics as easily. So
yeah, you got to do basic stuff before you jump into advanced
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. And, I have seen people that just jump straight into the specialty and they don't understand the comorbidities.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of patients that are older and they have a lot of comorbidities, so if you're not able to recognize those signs, it doesn't help you. So our requirements are very similar to other academies as well. There's, maintenance of credentials and stuff like that.
Sure.
I mean, really, we want to see you contribute to the profession.
Yeah, for sure.
and you mentioned the mentorship with a doctor that is certified. Mm-hmm. You may not have the answer to this, but how many of those are there?
I don't have the answer
okay.
to that.
Yeah.
See, that's a little part of my brain where I don't have enough information to store.
you filled that compartment with something else.
Yeah,
well, I'm just thinking that there's only 18 of you VTSs. There's got to be some... Some way that you got hooked up with a mentor that could help you out. So
yes. So yeah. I know in California there's over 100 veterinarians that have taken the additional training.
Yeah.
So that's just one number off the top of my
head.
But yeah, I mean you can go. There's the credentialing schools, and they all have a listing of everybody by state. So if you really wanted to, you could go and count them all up.
Well, and you also said the getting the CE, and pardon my ignorance here, but is there a rehabilitation CE conference that happens? We have small animal internal medicine, we've got ones on behavior, we've got emergency critical care. Is there one for you guys that's specifically for you?
It's not specific. It's one of those things that's in the process works, trying to happen.
Yeah.
So there's an international organization that provides CE, but it's international. So it bounces around to different countries every 2 years. So there is a rehab specific one for that. Online Pet Health, which is one of the continuing education sponsors for the APRVT. They just had a whole virtual live conference. They do it every single year. So that company, they've got it down. COVID, no problem. They just motored right along because they already had everything.
Yeah, they're already doing that.
They're already doing that. So that's a really great resource, especially right now for people. A lot of the programs, there was tracks at the VMX program, ACVS, there'd be a track for the sports medicine and rehabilitation. So they're around, but they're not, like at IVEX. Everybody knows it's IVEX.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's not a specific one right now. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if that happens in the next couple of years. The APRVT, we're chomping at the bit because we're technicians, we make it happen, right?
Right.
So...
Yeah. So with all of this stuff, and I'm going to kind of throw 2020 out the window here.
Sounds like a plan.
I wish we all could.
Say leading up until March of this year, what does a typical day look like for a rehab technician? Whether, is it all rehab? Do you ever have to dip your toe into any sort of non-rehab type stuff? Or does it get to be all rehab all the time? What kind of therapy are you providing? What kind of tools, shall I say, do you have at your disposal to utilize with training, that kind of stuff? What does your typical day look like?
Exactly. So it depends on what kind of a practice you're in.
Okay.
So if you're in a rehab only facility, your day is going to look very different.
Okay.
So let's just talk about, general practice. I'd say it's not all rehab all the time. Just like everybody knows, pet owner comes in. Oh, hey, by the way, they're limping in a different spot. Can you look at that? Like, what? Okay, sure. Let me go grab the doctor.
Yeah.
So in those cases, it's not all rehab all the time. So then you're talking about, okay, hey, doctor, give them the lowdown, and the doctor went, okay, let's go get an x-ray, and then nope, they did blood work. Now they need a prescription, and so you're 45 minutes of time has just gotten even longer.
Yeah.
And now you're behind. So in those situations, it's not all rehab all the time, which is kind of fun, but you're trying to also squeeze in, all right, you need to get your laser therapy done, and you have your hydrotherapy, and then your therapeutic exercise and any type of body work. And before COVID, we're talking with the client, pet parent, all the whole time. So you're talking about all these details and what has worked for the pet in the past, and you get a lot of oh by the way stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Which is great because then nothing goes unaddressed, right? Gosh, there's been a lot of different things where casual conversations and the pet parent realizes, oh my gosh, I was giving my pet this supplement and it was actually adversely affecting them, but they would have never realized that if they and I weren't having a conversation about their pet. We were joking, but then we realized, oh, hey, maybe the supplement's not a good thing for them. So in a general practice, I'd say that's not all rehab all the time. You're going to see some of the technician stuff being done as well. But most pets, are getting the hydrotherapy, the laser and stuff like that, depending on how the department's structured as well. There's a lot of medical record writing and documentation. Not the fun part, but that's okay. And I gotta say, scheduling for rehabilitation appointments is like a wizardry of itself. It is so complicated sometimes because depending on how much space you have, sometimes you can have two pets in the same room, but you can only have one family, and then the two pets have to be behaviorally okay together. So there's all these different moving parts that are kind of, some people really enjoy that. This is the part where I have my assistant do all of that stuff because I mess up my schedule all the time. The biggest thing for me is I'm not very good at saying no. Like, everybody can come in. Rehab for everyone. It's fine.
You all get rehab.
Rehab for everyone. Yeah. And then I get into the day and go, what was I thinking? So, because in what people don't understand too, especially with the front office, is that in rehab, when you say you have 2 minutes left, like 2 minutes, I'll get the pet out in 2 minutes. You're literally waiting for the underwater treadmill water to drain out. And then you have to dry the pet off. It's like, no, we literally have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm not just saying that. So everything's really down to the minute because you're trying to see as many pets as possible as well. But in those clinics where, you know, you don't have the general practitioner stuff, where it's rehab only, you know, you're not having any, hey, I need a refill of my medication, or hey, can you have the doctor look at this, you know, this new thing that's going on. And so it's handled very, very differently, for better or for worse. You know, it's very busy though, all day long. You're just packed full tilt.
Yeah. So thinking about your typical day, obviously before COVID or even now, how much involvement does your doctor have in what you're doing, other than like physical exams and the, oh, by the way, things that pop up in terms of just the rehab itself? Is that something that you kind of have autonomy for you to just kind of start your day and say, all right, these are my patients, this is my routine that I'm going to do with this patient, and kind of go from there? Do you have doctor involvement in what you're doing, or are you doing a lot of this on your own?
Yep, it's a good question. So yes, and it's like a yes and no. So the doctor is involved. It's kind of like, I liken it to when they're setting up an anesthetic plan. You know, here's your framework, right? We're going to do this to this pet for surgery. Here's your anesthetic protocol. And then here's what actually happens, you know, based on how the pet responds to things during surgery and anesthesia. So it's kind of the same thing with rehab, is you have this, you know, you have your condition and you have your plan and your prescriptions for all the therapeutic exercises that the veterinarian has set up. And then the pet comes in for continued care. And so at that point, you know, you say, okay, I have this older dog coming in. I know that they only walk for so many minutes on a regular walk with their pet parent. They're due for hydrotherapy. Here's kind of our frame for what we're going to do for their hydrotherapy session. And then you have to read their physical response to it. So if the pet, you have a goal, but if the pet doesn't make it, say, 10 minutes of walking, like, you gotta stop.
Yeah.
So that's where the skill comes in as well. So there's autonomy on that kind of stuff. You know, with the laser therapy as well, you know, you've got, okay, we're treating these different locations, you know, based on the condition and everything. So that's, you're carrying those things out, but the veterinarian, they're not standing there watching you.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to do doctor things and get your hair, right?
So. We say that a lot. Go do doctor things.
Yeah, go do doctor things. Right. With all due respect.
Yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to chat with you a little bit about, Kristen, was, you know, you and I are both active in California on the legislative side of things. And in California, there was a big push about whether or not human physical therapists could perform animal rehab. And we don't necessarily have to dive too deeply into that. But what I want to focus on with that is, why is it important for technicians to be involved in those kind of discussions? Why is it important to kind of know the process for that kind of stuff? And why is it important, you know, to be active in advocating for some of these legislative processes that go on? Because that was, and again, I realize California is very unique in this compared to the rest of the country and probably even the rest of the world, but that was a very, very big deal in our state, was whether or not human physician or human physical therapist could perform animal rehab, and trying to figure out the actual law and statute of that was a big deal. And I know you were very passionate and very, very into that. So just take a minute, if you don't mind, and talk about why it's important for technicians to care about stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in California, you know, just like with nurses, the physical therapy term is totally protected. And just like, you know, technician, registered veterinary technician, it's a legally protected term. So I will wag my finger at you guys for saying physical therapy earlier, because you're not supposed to do that, but that's okay.
thank you. I wasn't even aware that it was protected. So thank you.
Absolutely. And that's okay. But that's the thing, is that people don't know.
Right.
And I feel like the more education that people have and knowledge about all the different layers is really, really important, because most people don't know. And it's like, I'm not going to get mad at you. But now that you do, now I can really wag my finger.
Yes. Now I have to make that mental note.
What is it again?
Not do that anymore.
What are we supposed to say?
So you're supposed to say physical rehabilitation.
Physical rehabilitation, not yes. physical therapy. Perfect.
No, please don't. Yeah. So like, gotcha. I have no problem correcting people with that,
sure.
because I didn't go to school for that. It's not my title. And they absolutely, it's just like a veterinarian. They earned that, you know. But as far as, you know, veterinary technicians, it's really important for us to understand what's going on, because we're the ones often carrying out, like I talked about, you know, the therapies, doing the laser therapy, doing body work, you know, understanding like where the team comes into play and doing different things for the pets. Also, we're the pet's advocate as well. I mean, I think we do that naturally anyways, as being veterinary technicians, is that, hey, you know, that pet's behavior is not quite good over there. You might want to stop, that kind of stuff. Understanding the pet parent that comes in with information that might actually be really concerning, and that it's my role to like raise the red flag. You know, I mean, I've had many, many pets come in, say a dog with degenerative myelopathy. The owner comes in and says casually, oh yeah, they haven't peed for a while. Okay, so I go, you know, like, okay, we'll just carry on.
Right.
You palpate the abdomen. Oh my gosh, there's a basketball in there.
Yeah.
So that's an emergency. So like, that's where I think veterinary technicians and our role and understanding that we really need to be a big part of what's going on for the medical and nursing aspect for these pets with the comorbidities and disabilities, to really help other professionals that don't have the education on the nursing aspect that we do. So we can all work together. I mean, that would be like the biggest, like, oh, we love this, you know, big crystal ball thing, is that we're all working together as a team as much as possible.
Gotcha.
So we're kind of getting towards the end of our time for tonight that we're going to take up of your evening. Just kind of as a lasting thing, take a minute to just advocate for your job. What do you love about your job as a physical rehabilitator, not a physical therapist? See, I'm already learning. What do you love about your job, and why should somebody join you and do this profession?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I love my job so much. I've been doing it for such a long time. And I think probably one of the bigger things that I really love is the connection that I get with the pet parents. Because, you know, we've got these pets coming in so often for years, like I've mentioned, and you just develop this very unique relationship and bond with them, with the pet parents and the pets, that I really can't find anywhere else. So it's such a great rewarding experience to be able to help with these pets and their pain management. You know, sometimes they're young too, and you know, you're following them all the way through into their very senior years. So you've got this big spectrum of helping them through their pain experiences and just life. And then you've got all your own life and connecting with the pet parents as well. So that's what I really love. I really care deeply about, you know, how the pet parents are doing themselves and how their families are and all of that stuff. So that's kind of one of the main things that I help to recruit with new veterinary technicians. Like, of course, I'm going to convince everybody that you need to do rehab on dogs. It's amazing. So everybody I see, watch out. but really, you get this whole other layer of being involved with the patient and the family. And I gotta say, I have really come up with from the experiences, so many different layers of perspective that have helped me in my career, just to understand why people make decisions that they are making, you know, not having judgment. So for my professional life or my personal life, it really has helped me grow as a person too, to understand a lot of the things that are going on in the home.
Yeah. And when I'm thinking of that, you know, I think back, because Jeff and I are emergency critical care techs. We, mm-hmm. a lot of times our patients we see once and that's it. Yeah. And that's one thing I do miss about working in general practice is you get to see clients and build that relationship with them kind of as they're growing. Obviously you do have that connection with your patients and your owners because you're seeing them long term, whereas us in emergency and critical care, we see them probably once and never again.
Yeah.
Right. Hopefully never again. I know. It's like, you don't want them to come back, but yeah, you don't get a chance to build that relationship like we do. And, you know, a couple other specialties do as well, but you know, of course rehab is the best.
Sure. Speaking of that kind of relationship, if say you or one of your physical rehabilitator colleagues, if you had to take a leave of absence or if you were out sick, the work that you do with some of these patients, is that something that somebody else in the clinic or somebody else, say, as a physical rehabilitator, maybe nearby at a different facility, can they kind of pick up where you left off in a short-term situation? Or is it so niche that it's hard for anybody to kind of do it that isn't you?
It's not impossible, but it's very, very difficult. And it's really a layered question. But, you know, you've got to think of, you know, those relationships that you've built with the pet parents, that all that trust for all those sessions that you've spent with them. You've developed the trust of the patient as well. So to transition to another clinic, it's not impossible by any means, but it's hard. And really doing it within a clinic can also be difficult too. If the person that's, you know, filling in your role doesn't have the experience and training and stuff like that. So it is very, very niche. It can transition over, but it's not that easy. So that's why, again, every person that I see in our profession, you know, I just try and say, hey, what do you know about rehab? Even if it's just a small class or just a small piece of, you know, a pearl that they take away from something in the rehab world to take back to like their general practice or even emergency and critical care, believe it or not, something can help just to spread out all that niche stuff because there's a lot of applications to other specialties as well.
For sure. For sure. Well, I know we're getting down to the end. We've taken up quite a bit of your time already. But before Dave wraps up with your secret question, is there anything else you would like to get out to our listeners, to our caffeinators that maybe we haven't touched on yet that maybe popped into your head or anything?
Oh, gosh. You know, I would just say probably just like with everything in veterinary medicine, don't forget the self-care aspect of, you know, for the job. We pour our hearts into everything and we often forget to take care of ourselves, you know, to a detriment. And like we were just talking about with that niche stuff, you know, how could somebody possibly fill my role? Right. I'm the only one that can do it. And reality is that it, over time, is not going to be great. While it may feel okay in the moment, long term, that's going to wear us down. And we've got to look for that long longevity of a career. So self-care is a big one.
That's excellent. Excellent. Point. Excellent. Yeah.
All right, Kristen. Well, we're at the end of our time. I don't even know how long it's been by now. but we have one final question, your would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
Okay. Throw it at me.
All right. Jeff came up with this question. He found it today. And
yeah, based on something you put in your bio. So
exactly.
I think this applies to pretty much you and one or two other people I can think of.
Great. Okay, great.
And not to Jeff and I at all. Your answer could be anything to this question. Yeah, and Jeff and I are going to say, all right, that sounds legit.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, here we go. Would you rather live in the Star Trek universe or the Star Wars universe, and why?
Ooh, I got to go with Star Trek. Got to go there because of the transporters and the replicators. I'm all there.
The transporters are things that you can like teleport to places?
Yep.
Okay.
And transport anywhere. You know, if you watch any of those new episodes, you know, they've got amazing technology. So I'm still waiting for it.
And what does a replicator do?
You can basically make anything you want.
Wow.
Like a 3D printer?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a fancy 3D printer.
Super cool.
Really fancy. Come on.
Can you make people with that?
You can make food. I mean, Jean-Luc Picard, his famous is tea, Earl Grey, hot. Everybody knows that. So you can't tell him.
And I heard recently that Earl Grey tea tastes like Fruity Pebbles? Did I see that somewhere?
I haven't had it in a really long time. I would be surprised.
All right, great. Kristen. Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for all of these thoughtful conversations and discussions, because I know so many people, especially young technicians, that, because I feel like rehab is such an, to some degree, an emerging field. You may not feel like that, but I feel like people are just kind of starting to find out about it. And so many people are very interested in it. But it's one of those, too, that you don't see like rehab facilities on the street corner, so nobody knows how to kind of get involved. So I really appreciate you taking the time and answering some of these questions for us and
absolutely
getting all that info out there.
There's a pearl for everyone out there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you very much again by the Vet Tech Cafe, and we hope to catch up with you sometime soon.
Thank you for your time. It was great being here.
All right. Good night, everybody. Bye, guys.
Good night.
Hey, Caffeinators. We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As you guys are well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession, and we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave and I as the hosts, or those opinions expressed by our guests, are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, any other business or institution, or any other entity with or within the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please feel free to email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. You can check out our website, vettechcafe.com. And please, whatever podcast form you're using to listen to our episodes, like us, follow us there, like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And lastly, have a great day, Caffeinators. You guys are awesome. Bye, guys.